So welcome to the second part of the talk on anatta, non-self. And there are, of course, many, many, many ways to explore this subject and to get into it. And I will mainly use one way to explore it, which is through understanding concept. What is concept and the relation with a concept and reality somehow, just touching that area. And maybe we can come back to what Nicole was sharing in her last meditation, that there was a sense of space she described, but everything was felt in terms of distance somehow, like she could feel that the center is around the head, or maybe the body, and things are sensed at a distance from that center. And that's probably a feeling that when we practice meditation, it's probably something that we felt at times. Sometimes we have this feeling of being present and we're the center of this presence, and then perception, especially sounds, can be felt in the distance of me. And then Nicole was experimenting or wanting to see if it's possible to experience being space and sensing things not with a center, which is a non-counterintuitive somehow, because intuitively we will always feel ourselves as being the center. And that, reflecting on this, it reminded me of something that Nietzsche said, and I found it, so I'm going to read it and try to make the link, because it may not be obvious at first. So Nietzsche, he said that our identity as subject is a grammatical illusion. Our identity, our sense of I, the sense of me, is due to a grammatical illusion. And he says, actually, he's replying to Descartes somehow. He's speaking to the logician, the people who are going with logic. He's replying 200 years after, like this. Probably he's safe. He's not gonna get into an argument with Descartes. And he's saying, a thought come when it wants. Now you remember Descartes said, like the short version of his finding, his certainty, his solid thing that nobody could contest is, I think, therefore I am. Yeah. And then Nietzsche answer, a thought come when it wants and not when I want. A thought come when it want and when I want. So it is falsifying the fact to say that the subject I is the determination of the verb think. Quite complex. It is falsifying the fact to say that the subject I is the determination of the verb think. Something thinks, but saying that it is this good old I is more than a hypothesis, not at all an immediate certainty. The I think. And a little bit after, it's quite long, so I've just took some parts. He says, finally, it is already too much to say that something thinks, because this something already contains an interpretation of the process itself. We reason according to the grammatical routine. To think is an action, that's the grammatical routine. We always feel that to think is an action, and any action supposes an active subject. It's quite complex, but basically what he says is is well contained in the subject. He says our identity as subject, so feeling I am the subject of the thought, I think, is due to the grammar, is due to the concept. We cannot envision an action that is not made by a subject who is acting. It is in our way of thinking, we cannot imagine that something happened without something making it happen. And then I remembered about something that Thich Nhat Hanh said along the same lines. He was saying that we will say, he was starting with, it rains. Yeah, the sentence, small sentence, short, it rains. He said, actually, in Vietnamese, they don't say it like this. They just say rain. But in English or in French, we say it rains. So it being the subject of rain. But the question is, what is the it that is raining? But it is grammatically, we need to have a subject for an action. That's what Nietzsche said. Yeah, we need to have a subject of an action. And in Nicole's experience, they need to be a subject of the experience. There can't be an experience with a subject without a subject of the experience. So is it just like this, or is it because we are ingrained in this view and this way of thinking, we cannot conceive another way, so this frame our experience. So we can see that ideas, thoughts, and concepts mix with reality. It's very difficult to say, this is my idea, thought, and concept on one hand, and this is reality as it is without it. There's a little bit sometimes of this in Dharma teachings, where there's this kind of idea that if we are thoughtless, fully present, then we will see what is. We will get in touch by practicing bare attention without developing and adding thought to reality. Then we can see reality as it is. We can see things as they are, get in touch with reality bare. And although it is very true that when we practice that type of mindful contact with objects or with the present moment, then we will notice that there is less adding. There will be less construction. Like, let's say, if we're not at all mindful, any slight feeling or any small thought or any small perception will evolve into sometime a big story. Yeah, we will add a lot. Yeah? So then thoughts, ideas, and construct will be mixed and will mix with the perception. So we tend with the mindful attitude to have less and less adding. We stop this, what they call papancha, this proliferation of thoughts, and this has a very quietening down effect of the mind, and there's a stress relief and quite pleasant feeling and calming. But the idea that then we see reality as it is in question. Like, for instance, in what Nicole described, there were some thoughts, but there was probably, in the way she described it, there were moments without any proliferation. It wasn't like being trapped in a constant turmoil about me being in a sense of space and sensing distance all the time and wanting to, and then why is this, and adding. It was a noticing of the fact as they were, in the way she expressed it. So this was then quite bare attention about facts, about what is there. But still, it doesn't mean that beyond that, there was not concept at play. In other words, when we speak about concepts, we mean more than the activity of thinking. We can conceive, and we do conceive, without having thoughts. So we can be thoughtless and still sense reality through concepts. And that is quite evident when in meditation we get to quiet space, when there is less and less identification with personality ideas about ourselves and like no emergence of the ego, almost no movement, and sometimes thoughtless, or if there's a thought, it just comes and goes like this, but very little. Yeah, it is very, very quiet. There can be, without having thought, a feeling, I meditate. It's not a thought, it's a feeling. The I is a feeling. The sense of self and the sense of separated self is a feeling. Is that feeling induced by an ID or not? Is that feeling induced by a concept, as Nietzsche says? He says the sense of subject is a grammatical error. And in Buddhism, there are teachings that goes in this direction, and there are teachings that gives a way to practice so that we get free from that way of viewing. Free from that way of viewing doesn't mean that this is a complete mistake and we should never, ever again feel that we're self. It doesn't mean that at all. It just means that sometimes sensing us as being a separate self, I'm not speaking about personality here or ego or whatever. I'm beyond that. I'm speaking about the sense of self that is active there as a default mode all the time. From the moment we wake up until the moment we go to sleep, maybe it's there. Yeah. So there are teachings that speaks about the possibility of something else and how to explore and make ours other way of conceiving the reality. And one teaching is this one. I'm going to read it to you. It's coming from Girimananda Sutra that we have been also using in the first home retreat. I will send it to you, by the way, so you don't have to write it or remember it. So Buddha, speaking to one of his monks, says, "And what is the perception of not self?" So that's a scoop, yeah? Buddha is saying, what is the perception of non-self? You should listen carefully, I think. "There is the case where a monk, having gone to the wilderness, to a shade of the tree or to an empty building, reflect thus." So that's the introduction. And you can imagine he's speaking to a monk and he's saying that the monk, having gone to the wilderness, so he's going in nature, he's going under a tree or in an empty hut, And this is for meditation. He's stilling the body the way we do and reflect us this way. The eye for seeing, not the I, not the self. That's confusing in English. The eye from sight is not self. Forms are not self. So the eye that is seeing is not self. This is not me. And what is seen is not me. The ear is not self. Sounds are not self. So we cannot find self in the ear. And we should not identify with the ear, neither with the sounds. The nose is not self, aromas are not self, the tongue is not self, flavors are not self, the body is not self. Tactile sensations are not self, the intellect is not self, ideas are not self. Thus he remained focused on non-selfness with regard to the six inner and outer sense media. This is called the perception of not self. So he's practicing denying self into all the senses and all the perception. This is not me. I'm not in this. This is not me. I'm not in this. This is the practice of non-self. And there's another story that illustrates that. It's the story... Bahia. So Bahia was a sadhu, a hermit, and he was practicing quite hard since quite some time. And at some point, he was just wondering if he was enlightened or not. He wasn't sure, like, is that it? Am I there? Is it the end? Did I arrive to the final freedom or not? So how to know? And that night, in a dream, there was a kind of goddess who visited his dream. And they were good friends, that's another story, but the goddess came for that and said, Bahia, I came because I heard your thoughts and you're wondering whether you're enlightened and free or not. And, well, I have to say, you're not. And also I have to say, in the way you're practicing, you're not even going to get there. The way you practice will not conduce you to freedom. And when he woke up, Bahia, then he was quite a dedicated yogi, dedicated to the search. So he could hear that. He could hear, okay, so my practice will not lead me to where I want to go. Then, no, it's in his dream, actually, he asked to this devata. He asked, who can teach me? And the devata said, there's one guy, and he's in Savitri or Saviti, I'm not sure the city, and he's the Buddha, and he can teach you. He found the way. Okay, so he was open enough to hear that someone else found it, that he had not found it, that he was mistaking for all these years. And then he took his small bag and went off to find the Buddha. And he arrived in the city. And the Buddha was begging, so he was asking to the Buddha. And the Buddha said, I cannot teach you because this is my eating time. And then... this is in the story, yeah, I read it. And then he asked a second time, and the way he asked, you know, this is very Indian, he said, please, for my welfare and the welfare of all beings, and please, oh Lord Buddha, teach me the way to get out of suffering, and something like that. And again, the Buddha said, sorry, I'm eating. And then he asked a third time, and then the Buddha had to answer. That's in India, that's the way it goes. If you ask three times for food, for anything, you go in India, you ask three times, you get it. And so that's part of the tradition. So then the Buddha said to Bahia, he said, okay, Bahia, listen, you should practice this way. And this is very important. He's saying, He's not saying things are like this. He's saying you should practice this way. In the seen, just the seen. In the heard, just the heard. In the sensed, just the sensed. And in the cognized, just the cognized. And Bahia, when in the seen, they will just be the seen. And when in the heard, they will just be the heard. And when in the sensed, they will just be the sensed. And in the cognized, they will be just the cognized. Then there is no you there. You see, he's saying there is not I see, I sense, I think, I perceive. The I feeling is removed. So he continues and say, and when in the seen and the sense and the heard, then there is no you there. And when there is, how does it go? Yeah, and when there is no you there, there is no you here, there is no you on the other world, there is just like a total absence of sense of self. Yeah, I was not finding the exact words of but I will send it to you. But that's the understanding, that's the teaching. So what is important here is, I find, what is important is first to remember he's saying, practice this way. Train yourself to see things without a center. Train yourself to make your the concept that the possibility that things are perceived by space, not by an entity that is I. So when we're in meditation, we have the feeling I am aware. Who is the I that is aware? Who is the I? I am aware. It's like it rains. Awareness. Thus, only awareness. Where is the I that is aware? My awareness went in thoughts. My awareness? Who's the owner of awareness? Do we know? But it's a feeling. It's a very natural, unquestioned, presupposed feeling that comes from the beginning of human brain, maybe. That's how we have evolved and developed. Same with time. The sense of time may well be a way of thinking that induces time. And children have a hard time getting it. It's only at 7 that later means something. Everything is just now. They want something now, later means nothing. Time is very difficult to learn. It's very practical, doesn't mean it exists. If you watch this movie Arrival, so it's quite, I find it quite interesting how they play with this concept of time. Yeah, how if we would have a different language, we would feel time very differently. Or maybe we wouldn't feel time. Who knows? Difficult concept to play with. What about self? If we would have complete different set of thoughts about self, maybe we would experience self differently. Or maybe we wouldn't experience self. Again, how do babies experience, newborn babies experience self? There are a lot of research on this. And I'm not sure someone knows, but it seems quite clear that it's not as separate, as individual as we do. So at all levels, we can see that concept has an impact on how we feel, from the level of the personality and the knowledge, like the ideas we have about ourselves. I am this, I am not courageous, I am not doing what I need to do, I am a honest person, I am this, and all these ideas we have about ourselves defines the way we appear and defines how we feel. Yeah. And if we change the idea, we feel differently. And our ideas of ourselves are constantly moving, and then we feel very different from moment to the next. That's true at one level. But to the very bottom of our experience, where there is only, and that's the beauty of meditation, we can have the experience of almost nothing happening. So all these aspects of our experience are gone, and we are there feeling just as if we were a big awareness somehow, but there is still this sense of I somewhere. Is that induced by a concept, or is it just like inbuilt as a reality in nature or whatever? So that's a question for self-knowledge. Usually self-knowledge means, so I know myself, I'm like this and I'm not like that, and there's something interesting on that level. But here we're much deeper in the question of self-knowledge. It's interesting that we could understand maybe in the Bible, the Genesis also a little bit like this. In the beginning, there was the Logos, or the Word. Yeah, the concept. And the Word was in God, and the Word was God. And God created the earth and the sky. I'm not sure in English how it gives, but something around this. But in the beginning was the Word. Yeah, so how much is the way we conceive is creating? Is there a reality that can be experienced without any concept behind? That's a complex question. Is there one moment where we can say this is real and there's no concept acting at the background, shaping the experience or creating the experience? So in the Dharma, in meditation, as anywhere else in life, we use concepts. And depending on the concept we use, we have a certain outcome, a certain feeling, a certain result. And then we deepen the understanding of our concepts. If we don't, we are stuck in the surface of the Dharma, I would say. Like thinking that we can go and enter the depth of the Dharma without any concept. I don't know. Certainly what I want to say is like the idea that a bare attention would lead to total freedom is nowhere in the Buddhist text, and I don't see how that would be possible. That it give a certain momentary relief from any tension, and that gives a big open sense, spacious sense of self, yes, surely, but that it will uproot the cause of suffering, it's nowhere. So for that, they need to have an understanding that is brought from looking into our concepts and refining them. This is why there is this type of talk, and this is why I'm so interested in non-self, which is very metaphysical approach of the Dharma, but in my understanding, very necessary. There are other approaches in other tradition that would work, but here in Buddhism and in as well as in Advaita, the understanding is hugely important. Even more in the Advaita, they will even almost not practice meditation there, but only the reflection of who am I and what is the self, and finding freedom in that direction. So if we realize that when we have concepts, and we do have concepts, it has a certain outcome. Life appears in a certain way, things happen in a certain way, things are seen in a certain way, depending on how we screen them with our concept, or depending on how we create them with our concepts. Then we can start to play in meditation with different ways of seeing, and actually any way of seeing could be interesting. So, and many times I hear in meditation, oh, I have done like this, imagining this and doing this, and it has this, it brought me this effect and this realization, and this is fantastic. This is a very good exploration. The bottom exploration is to understand that because I have this concept, I have this outcome. This is the most important, because then we understand how much of the experience is actually a construct. I think that's the important realization, is how much is constructed of the experience of self and the world and time. As we have done in the last meditation, for instance, we have used an idea, or if I have no memory. And for some of us, it kind of brought a strong feeling, something. And I heard some people sometime with this no memory meditation, like suddenly, just because we bring in a way of viewing, suddenly finding themselves in a very different place in their meditation, in this time much quieter in this example. So we can say that's a concept that has an effect. It works, and it has an effect, and it has an effect that can be positive, so why not using this concept? It's not saying that we should live without memory. So that's not what we should do with concept, that believing that they are truth, but more that we can use them. Yeah, so same with the concept of I am awareness, for instance. Very useful concept. I am awareness. You know, so when it comes very quiet, as soon as we are present enough to have this feeling that objects are seen, and if we manage to get in touch with that which is seeing, so the sense of the subjective, the perceiver of the object, then this will kind of make us feel directly more spacious, less involved by movement and activity, by what is coming and going, much more equanimous, more stable, and less reactive, because we won't be involved in what is changing. Yeah, we will feel our sense of I being in the awareness. And if we then have developed enough mastery on along the lines of awareness can be non-personal, then we can, this is the subtext, if it means something. It's like we have this concept of awareness, which we find very much in Advaita and also in some places in Buddhism, the concept that awareness is ever present. So in Buddhism, it's kind of a stepping stone towards somewhere, we say. But in Advaita, it's like awareness is something that is ever present, uncreated, unborn, ultimate, out of time. You know, so when we develop this view, and when we sense we are quiet enough, we can sense this witnessing quality, this awareness being there. And then we sense this awareness is I, and this awareness is not personal. It's universal and unborn. Then our experience can be extremely strong and very spiritual and mystical. And because the concept induced that. That's my understanding. Some people will say, because it's like that, we are awareness. Fine. For me, I'm not at this stage of my practice and where I'm at with my small Dharma path, I'm not ready to state the final statement. Not yet. Give me some time, please. Now, what I can say is that when I view awareness like this, and when I identify myself with it, and when I enter in this view, it has a very useful, lovely, freeing effect. So this is a view that is most precious and dear to me. That it is true, I don't know. And I don't need to know. And I don't want to know even. I don't want to enter in this business of what is true and what is not true, because I don't see why. I'm not sure that we can anyway find something true in this way. I think it's Gandhi who said there are as many truths as there are people, and I'm not sure even one is right. So it is safe to not engage so much in what is true and what is not true. Let's not go there. Let's see, what is this view bringing to me? Let's say the view of, let's say a view that I would have of Christianity and devotion and faith, and I'm involved, let's say, in Christianity, and I have my relation with it. I have all the concepts that come with it, yeah? And this is my spiritual path. This is the way I see life. Through God, through Jesus, okay? So if it's true or not, finally, who cares? But how do you walk in life? That, I think we should care. How is this view making, how is this view creating, what kind of human does that create? Do you feel free? Are you loving towards yourself and other? Are you walking fearlessly? Then this is fantastic view. It works. No need to change. But if in this view you find that this kind of view has some shortcoming, somewhere I feel there is somewhere deeper to go, and because of this view I'm stuck, then change. Doesn't matter. No attachment to the view. This is emptiness. The view is empty. It doesn't have ultimate reality. And so for me, till now I have, and I am still, it's ingrained in my practice that there is the identification with awareness. I love the Advaita. It's been my main practice, the who am I, and the questioning, and the the awareness as the ultimate, it's been my main practice for so many years, and it still is in my meditation and in my way of thinking. And now, since a few years, I'm opening up to this non-self, which is something different that brought by the Buddha at his time. It's different. It's another view. It's another way of creating life, or of screening, or of decoding, whatever. Is emptiness is like I'm not even awareness. So it's the idea in the emptiness, you have the idea in the awareness practice, and in the Advaita, there's the idea that awareness is ever present. In sleep, dream, and wake, unshaken, unmoving, never absent, existing before birth, staying after death, yeah, like maybe the notion of God in Christianity or something close to that, eternal, omniscient, you know, unchanging, unaffected. So this is awareness. And in Advaita, it's like mind-blowing, strong, only awareness, nothing else. It's like one of the most famous saying of Nisargadatta Maharaj that I love, because it's like a sharp razor blade. It's like the saying is, the real never dies. Yeah? So that's going towards awareness. The real never dies. What is not real never lived. Thus, done with conventional reality. Illusion. Ciao. You see? So that's very powerful, because it's very freeing in a certain way. And now I'm playing with this other view of emptiness, which is not even awareness. I am nothing, not even awareness. So in Buddhism, there's an understanding that awareness is, yeah, actually, once I heard it should not be a word, it should be a verb. Awareness should be like, because awareness in Buddhism exists only when something is seen. Awareness or consciousness, you can mix them in most of the teachings. Not all of them, but in many teachings, like this one of my teacher, Robert Bea, uses both, exchanging all the time. And many teachers do that. So awareness arrive when something is seen. There is the seen and there is the awareness. There is the subject and there is the object. And when there is not the seen, there is not the awareness. In Buddhism, not in Hinduism, in Hinduism, in the awareness is always there, ever present, omniscient, unchanging. Deep sleep, dream, and wake, before death, after death, not moving. Yeah. And in Buddhism, it's no, emptiness. Nothing, nothing, nothing ever exists. And everything is impermanent. Even awareness is impermanent. A different view. Let's not go in argument about who is right and wrong. We don't care. But when we use this view in meditation, it has a different effect. That's what I'm playing with. And what I find is that it has the effect of removing the idea, any sense of subject. It leads, because what I feel with the awareness, ever-present awareness, I am this awareness that is always there, then there is still a sense of I am that is there. There is still very fine, for me, reification of the sense I am. I am ultimate, I am this that I experience. I am this experience of being aware. Identification to that. Whereas in emptiness, in the way anatta, in the way I understand, it's this also I'm not. then it removes even something. Quite fine, quite deep. If you're not getting it, no problem. If it seems like too far out, no problem. It's just maybe a seed for the future. It's maybe not something that is interesting for you in the Dharma, and there are maybe, because there's so many ways. But maybe for some of you it triggers some curiosity. And that's more than enough. No belief, nothing to believe here. Two ways to explore. And actually, they may be even almost the same, like infinity or non-existence. Yeah, maybe they're just two faces of the same coin. But the emptiness view is more difficult to accept than the awareness view, because the awareness is still kind of something. Emptiness is not kind of something. And we have difficulty with void. When the zero came, I was reading the story of the zero. It's very interesting how the zero came. It came in different civilization, but never really as a number. And then first, who used the zero as a real number, not just a mark to separate two numbers or something like this, but just a number. It was in the Indians were using that at the 8th century, which is it's not so far. And before that, the zero, the concept of zero was not even existing. Now we cannot believe this. How could they make without a zero? But you see, like even the Roman counting, like this one being like a I, and two is two I, you see, and three in three I, and 10 is a cross, yeah? There's no zero. Yes, zero was not there. Zero is emptiness, shunya. It came in India because they have a relation with the void, with emptiness. But in the West, there was no relation with the void. It was not even believed that it does exist, the void, the vacuum. So then Arabs found very interesting this zero business in India, and then they wrote books, like scholars wrote books, two major books that came in the West, and when they arrived, it was considered by the church like the devil, and it was refused by the church, but it was very practical for the merchants, for the counting. The zero was very interesting, the system of 1 to 0, 9 and then 0, was a very interesting counting system, very much more practical than the Roman numbers. So that's how the zero finally came. But even the idea of nothing is difficult. So when we think I am awareness, this is kind of something. So it's more familiar to think I am something than I am nothing. If you see what I mean, it's more difficult to go that step further. So the meditation will do, and I see time is flying. Yes, it's flying. So the meditation will do after the break. You'll need a break after this, I'm sure. So the meditation we will do after the break is a meditation where we will train a little bit to see to feel. I think we can say like this, we will train to feel that we are let me find how to express this. That anything we perceive is not me. Anything, a thought, it's not me. And I'm also not the thinker of that thought. A thought is perceived like, remember the story of Bahia. In the scene, just the scene, in the heard, just the heard, in the sense, in the cognized, just the cognized. There's no I, there's no you due to that. So we'll practice that. When a thought is there, we'll practice, this is not me, this is not my thought, and this is not me thinking. Yeah? It's not easy. When there will be a sound, we will practice. There is nobody hearing that sound. That's what it means. It sounds a bit crazy, doesn't it? Yeah. So, but this is totally counterintuitive, but we're practicing a way to, it's kind of, I was saying about this experience of thoughts used in science and also in philosophy. So it's something like this. How would it be if we practice the idea, the possibility that there is no entity, that things are seen by space, if we can say it like this, are perceived by space. We have practiced a little bit, and you may have practiced a lot. Some of you have long-term practice, things are seen by awareness. Yeah. And if what I'm saying now is too much conceptual and complex for you, then seeing I am awareness and awareness is the witness of whatever happens, then stay with that. But here we will practice that anything that is emerging is just seen not by a center. As Nicole was describing in the beginning, that's a little bit what you were trying to practice, Nicole. And so everything we will perceive, we will say inwardly, as lightly as possible, but in the beginning it's not light at all, it's kind of a very complex way of meditating. We will try to see this as not me and not mine. Not me, not mine. The thought, I am not contained in the thought, and this is it's not me thinking. Yeah? Not me, not mine, not me, not mine. And this is a practice. So it means this next meditation may not bring any sense of a deep space like the idea of no memory could bring maybe at once. Here, no, it's different. It's more a long-term habit and training of the mind to view things like this. And we will have to be very aware when we practice this on how we feel. And if at some point we feel that there is a letting go of the grasping on the sense of self, or I want this to stay, I want this to go, then this practice will be very useful for us. The aim always is to relieve suffering, is suffering that is caused from grasping. Yeah, that's all understanding that needs to be there so that this practice makes sense. Release the grasping, release the suffering, feel more free. If that practice helps, then this is a good practice. But it will take some time. This way of meditating will ask a lot of time because it's practicing a way of seeing life that is totally counterintuitive. And life may be very, like if you see quantum physics, if you have watched this little video that I sent, or if you look into it, you will see that actually we find very counterintuitive findings about life. The things are not the way they seem to be. Okay, thank you for your listening. And We have a 45 minute break. Maybe we can take 1 minute meditation together after this long talk, just to come down a little bit with the mind, and then go for the pause.